Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's Recommendations to Strengthen Immigration Court System Efficiency and Effectiveness conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, you will have the opportunity to ask questions during the question and answer session. Please note this call may be recorded. I will be standing by should you need any assistance. It is now my pleasure to turn today's conference over to Ben Johnson, Executive Director of the American Immigration Lawyers Association. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much. Thank you all for joining us on the call. Just kind of quickly set the stage here. Really, over the last year, the Trump administration, more specifically Department of Justice under the direction of the Attorney General Jeff Sessions, has been pursuing a series of changes in policy and procedures that raise deep concerns about the integrity of our nation's immigration courts and about the Department of Justice's commitment to due process for those who appear in our immigration courts. As a result of these concerns, back in December of 2017, the American Immigration Lawyers Association and the American Immigration Council filed a FOIA request to find out more about what was happening and specifically what was happening at the Executive Office for Immigration Review, which is the division within the Department of Justice that's responsible for our immigration courts. We got an initial response to that FOIA request in February of 2018, and we got a final response on April 11th of this year. Included in the response to our FOIA request is an April 2017 report from Booz Allen Hamilton to the Department of Justice on the operations and effectiveness of the courts. The findings and recommendations of that Booz Allen report raise very real concerns about the motivations of the Attorney General in making the changes we've seen over the last year, and deep concerns about the impact that they're having on the ground. These changes have ignored the findings of the report, and in some critical areas, they have moved in the exact opposite direction. So what we're here to talk about is about the report, but more broadly about the changes that have been happening at DOJ as they relate to our nation's immigration courts. We have with us Congresswoman Zoe Lofgren, who is the ranking member in the House Judiciary Committee's Immigration and Border Security Subcommittee. We have Emily Creighton, who is the Deputy Legal Director at the American Immigration Council. We have Laura Lunn, who is the Detention Program Managing Attorney at the Rocky Mountain Immigrant Advocacy Network. And we have retired immigration judge John Gossert joining us. So, Congresswoman Lofgren, maybe you can start us off and talk about these issues.
Well, thanks very much. You know, immigration law is very complex, and the idea that you can simply make snap decisions and adhere to the constitutional requirement of due process is simply incorrect. As we know, there's no right to government-appointed counsel, and so immigration judges often have to go the extra mile to find facts, do legal research, to make sure that the Constitution's requirement for due process are met. Now, this difficult task really is magnified by the stakes. I think it was Judge Dana Marks who once said that immigration proceedings are like, and I quote, death penalty cases heard in traffic court settings. So this is, you know, especially true when it comes to people seeking asylum, children, and other vulnerable populations. It's important to note that there is bipartisan support for the idea that we need to have caseloads that are more reasonable and case processing that is more current. But the remedy that has been proposed by the Trump administration is really quite wrongheaded and at odds with what they know to be right. Take a look at how we have changed our enforcement proceedings. From 2002 to today, funding for immigration enforcement increased by over 400%. The ICE and the CBP budgets went from a budget of $4.5 billion in 2002 to over $20 billion in 2017. Now, in contrast, the budget for the judicial branch in immigration, EOIR's budget, increased only 70%. So you can see that as we funneled more and more matters, into the courts, we did not keep up with the resources necessary. Now, the idea that the Trump administration has to have quotas is completely incorrect, and as will be outlined later in this call, at odds with the professional advice that they have received. We need to make sure that we have adequate resources in our immigration courts, but we also need to make sure that the Constitution is adhered to and that due process is not short-circuited. I have a bill that would provide, it's called the Fair Day in Court for Kids Act, that would provide government counsel to children and other vulnerable individuals. That would at least speed up the processing, because instead of the judge trying to find out what the five-year-old knows, their lawyer would be able to represent what the five-year-old knows, and matters would proceed more quickly. We also need to take a good look at the independence of the immigration courts. We are looking right now on a bill that would provide for Article I immigration courts similar to the changes made a number of years ago, which I worked on in the 70s, to make bankruptcy judges a form of Article I judges. We need to make sure that the Trump administration, in their rush to punish immigrants, doesn't end up punishing the Constitution and denying due process. I look forward to hearing about the additional report that the AILA has cleverly pried out of the administration, showing that their proposals are completely at odds with what they know to be the right way to act. Thanks very much, Ben.
Thank you very much, Congresswoman. A perfect segue. Emily, you want to talk about the report a little bit?
Sure. Thanks, Ben, and thanks, Congresswoman. Thanks to all of you who've joined the call for your interest in learning more about what we feel is a very revealing document that was released in response to a FOIA request from the American Immigration Council and AILA. I'm going to say a few words about the FOIA request itself that resulted in the release of the report and share some observations about the recommendations in the report. As Ben mentioned, the FOIA was submitted on December 13, 2017, and it sought information performance measures that were possibly planned, or any current performance measures that were being imposed on immigration judges, and what we're calling now IJ quotas. So in response to our FOIA, this report was released, and as many of you know, it's now recently in the wake of the highly controversial decision by EOIR to apply case completion quotas to immigration judges. So after our FOIA was filed, these IJ quotas became a reality, and the new quotas require immigration judges to complete 700 cases per year, avoid having decisions reversed by the Board of Immigration Appeals and the Courts of Appeals, and to meet a variety of other benchmarks, such as short deadlines for issuing removal decisions or bond decisions. Among other things that we requested in the FOIA were documents such as studies and reports relating to immigration court operations, specifically those produced in 2016 and 2017. And so this Booz Allen Hamilton report relates to that specific portion of the request. I want to note that these documents are available on AILA and the Council's website, the FOIA request itself, and the FOIA documents that we received in response. In anticipating there might be some questions about next steps with our FOIA request, I'll just say that we're still deciding whether or not to challenge any redactions applied to this report and whether there are documents that are responsive that we haven't received or whether the search was adequate. And these are questions we ask in the normal course of our FOIA work, and we're still in the process of that analysis. Now, the report, because it's described as a year-long case study, we know it was commissioned at least a year prior to its release in April 2017. And it involves what Booz Allen Hamilton describes as the first comprehensive study based on data analytics. It discusses the number of pending cases at the outset of the report. So just before the report was published, they talked about the staggering number of cases that were pending, 564,000 cases pending in the immigration court backlog at the time, which we know has now grown to over 650,000 cases. And this enormous backlog served as a backdrop for the study, which looked at the inefficient practices and case processes and honed in on the causes for these inefficiencies. and looked very carefully at understaffing, issues related to workforce culture, and ineffective processes. And you'll see in the data request portion of the report, in the beginning of the report, that the team looked at data from fiscal year 2000 to 2015. They asked for additional statistics where they saw data gaps, and they arrived at trends regarding caseload and case completion rates, and visited courts, 18 courts, between June and September of 2016, and conducted 150 interviews with court personnel and stakeholders, such as community-based organizations and AILA. It also involved a five-week time study that involved 59 courts, and 92% of the court staff participated. So all of this data informed the recommendations in this report. So this is to say, we believe this is an extensive and in-depth analysis of court operations and are astonished at the steps the Department of Justice has taken that directly contradict recommendations that were informed by this analysis. And so I'm going to just outline a few that we really think are noteworthy. The report recommended that EOIR take steps to develop a judicial performance review model that emphasizes fair process and judicial independence, not IJ quotas. And you'll see that on page 25 of the report. It discusses how performance reviews should be in line with a model that emphasizes process over outcomes and places high priority on judicial integrity and independence, and that IJs need time to fully deliberate complicated issues that arise in cases and the opportunity to issue more oral decisions, as many of you know, to issue more written decisions. As many of you know, immigration judges often issue oral decisions for lack of time. The report also pointed out, and it's not surprising to us, that efficiencies related to improved access to counsel. So providing better access to attorneys, according to the report, helps alleviate delays and inefficiencies in court processing. And the report recommended that the agency consider expanding the legal orientation program. It says pro se respondents often face difficulty representing themselves and may contribute to delays in court processing. To overcome these delays, the Department of Justice should consider expanding Know Your Rights and legal representation programs such as the legal orientation program. And I've mentioned that EOIR imposed case completion quotas, as the other speakers have also mentioned. But here, too, the recommendation regarding improved access to counsel that specifically addresses the value of the legal orientation program has been utterly ignored by this administration. It was reported and confirmed by agency officials that the agency called a halt to the program, despite the fact that Congress has appropriated funds to continue the program, and studies have demonstrated that it creates efficiencies and saves the government money. And I just want to point out, there's certainly other issues to highlight here, but I want to make sure to touch on the fact that the report mentioned that EOIR should continue to explore helpful procedures in court proceedings, such as administrative closure, to help streamline caseloads. And administrative closure is sort of a technical term, but folks on the phone might be familiar with the Attorney General's recent decisions to certify cases to himself, to actually review immigration cases himself, and determine the outcome of those cases. And right now, he has certified a case to himself that involves administrative closure, which, you know, in the end, could signal an end to this important procedural mechanism. And we know it's an important mechanism that helps overburdened immigration judges control their caseloads. And so if they are not able to prioritize hearings and prioritize their cases, this could actually contribute to greater overburdening of the court and large numbers of cases being added back onto the docket of courts. So it turns out, according to this report, recommendations to resolve inefficiencies and ineffective practices in immigration court are grounded in concepts of due process. And this isn't surprising to us, but we think it's important that the public understand independent evaluators also shared this with the agency, and that the agency has chosen to ignore it. And I'll say one word about FOIA work and the need to compel government transparency in this current environment. And I know I don't need to convince the media representatives on the call, but we're learning how critical it is to hold the government accountable through FOIA at this time when we face constantly changing immigration policies and practices that are withheld and obscured by immigration agencies. And exposing a report like this demonstrates the inconsistent reasoning informing our government policy decisions. Solutions that make the system more efficient and effective don't have to compromise fairness, and we have to continue to ask our government what background information or analysis informs agency policy decisions along the lines of what we've seen recently. These aren't small changes the agency is taking. They're radical changes to the immigration court system that we now know deliberately contradict what independent evaluators have recommended be done. So I'll turn it back to you, Ben, And I'm happy to answer questions around all of that later.
Thanks, Emily. Thanks so much. And I think you raise important points about the lack of transparency and the impact of these kinds of things on the ground. You know, certainly the American Immigration Council and ALEV, we started a justice campaign to give us an opportunity to support and work with organizations that, you know, are at detention facilities and other places where the impact is felt immediately as a result of these policies, that we see the changes on the ground there. And Laura Lunn, who's with the Rocky Mountain Immigrant Advocacy Network, is one of those organizations that sees how this plays out on the ground. And Laura, share with us, if you could, what the LOP program changes mean and other impacts that you're seeing.
Sure. So I just want to provide a little bit of background in terms of the legal orientation program. And that is just a program to facilitate presentations where we orient individuals who have been picked up by Immigration and Customs Enforcement so that they better understand what is going on. And that can entail better understanding how they can get released from detention, how they can proceed with fighting the merits of their case. If they want to be deported, we talk to them about the fastest avenues for them to be able to do that. And it is a screening process for us to be able to identify meritorious cases so that we can assign pro bono counsel to assist those individuals. We hand out lists of attorneys from the American Immigration Lawyers Association so that people have access to counsel. And I think the biggest question that people don't fully understand when they are picked up and put into detention is whether or not they have the right to government-appointed counsel or just the right to counsel in general. And so we're really ironing out a lot of the questions that people have once they become detained, because so many people are not familiar with these processes. It's extraordinarily complex, and so we try to help make this information digestible so that people can better make decisions for themselves moving forward. And to highlight the need for this program, locally, only 9% of individuals are represented by counsel in the detention facility, and that percentage is only 14% nationally. So we really are the stopgap in between people who don't have access to counsel and getting better information about these court processes. Through our access to the detention facility, we are able to see in real time the on-the-ground changes that have taken place under this current administration. One example is the lack of continuances or the reticence for judges to grant continuances in cases, especially when people are trying to find an attorney. We're also seeing changes in docketing. So the judges have a lot of pressure under the new judge quotas to hear their cases as rapidly as possible, and so they're not affording enough time to share the details of the individual's claim and for that person to present evidence in support of their claim. And so when there isn't enough time allocated, the judges are having to reset those cases, or there's pressure on the respondent to wrap up the hearing as quickly as possible. I think the biggest thing that we're noticing is enhanced enforcement actions by ICE and a lot of collaboration with local law enforcement. And the result of that is that many people with who are visa overstays are being picked up without any type of criminal history, which includes long-term residents of the United States. The vast majority of people that we have at our facility are asylum seekers without any type of criminal history, and in particular, a lot of individuals who speak rare languages who would otherwise not have the ability to talk to anybody about their cases without being able to talk to us through the legal orientation program. So through our work, we offer pro se support to individuals who do not have an attorney. Again, we work with the Immigration Justice Campaign to try and afford folks pro bono representation, and that includes working with a pool of volunteer attorneys. And if we don't have access to the population at the detention facility through the legal orientation program, we are unable to place these cases. We are unable to provide lists of attorneys so that people can hire their own counsel, which also, you know, raises issues in terms of notario fraud and people not having access to good information about who is equipped to represent them in immigration court. And I think that the report that we're highlighting today really just shows how the legal orientation program mitigates case processing bottlenecks, and we work hand-in-hand with EOIR in order to try and expedite the adjudication of cases because we have similarly aligned goals. We want people to be detained for the least amount of time possible so that they have due process afforded to them, which is a constitutional right that they enjoy as non-citizens in this country. And the current administration is just, it's a ruse, honestly. They are trying to strip the LOP contract under the idea that they need to do a performance review, but across the board, all performance reviews have shown that this program helps with judicial efficiency. It helps ensure due process, and EOIR knows that and wants to work in collaboration with these providers, and the Department of Justice is just stripping any type of access to counsel, even though it's limited, it's there currently, and they're creating the grandest David and Goliath type of situation that I've ever bared witness to.
Laura, thank you very much for that. And then, so finally, I think to round out the picture that we're trying to provide here is Judge John Gossert. Judge, I wonder if you might share with us a little bit about what is the perspective from the bench. What does this look like from where you sit?
Sure, I'm happy to do so. By way of background, I was a United States immigration judge for 31 years and retired in the end of 2013. I continue to be a member of the National Association of Immigration Judges, the national organization that represents all of our judges, to include many of our retired judges. The role of a United States immigration judge is one that has to be independent. Our role and responsibility is to conduct full and fair hearings, to give people their day in court, the opportunity to be heard, their opportunity to present their witnesses, their testimony, and then the judge has the responsibility of making a decision based upon the law, the regulations, and case precedents. This is what due process is all about, giving a person the opportunity to be heard. And it is important that a judge exercise his and her independence. The recent directive to impose quotas beginning in October upon our immigration judges is without precedence. And in fact, destroys the very definition of what a judge is. Quotas have no business in any court system, let alone our immigration court system. You can't measure due process by numbers. As I mentioned, the primary role of the judge is to decide each case fairly and impartially. And this is the essence of due process. And time metrics, of course, have no place in this. And what will happen, as already been stated, is if a judge is under a quota system, people will not have a full and fair hearing. The judge will be more concerned about completing cases and meeting the quota than giving a person their day in court, however long it takes for the case to be resolved. And we've seen a number of administrative directives in the last year regarding judicial independence. There is a memorandum that came from the Chief Judge's office regarding restrictions on continuances, notwithstanding the fact that this memorandum says we're not trying to restrict the judge's independence and due process is important. We've seen it now on administrative closures, which is the ability of a judge in managing his or her docket to close a case that is not a priority case. A person perhaps who's in the United States in violation of the law but is married to a U.S. citizen, we'll say, has U.S. citizen children, works, pays taxes, may own a business, may hire people, and they have an equity that is yet to mature but is in the process of maturing. This is not a priority case, nor it should be a priority case. But yet, we now have the Attorney General of the United States bringing back cases, which he has the right to do, for him to consider on administrative closures, on continuances, on even our asylum law and what would constitute a member of a particularly social group in matters of domestic violence. And so he has had a number of cases, three or four cases certified back to him, where he's taking a look at this. Our perspective as judges and members of the National Association of Immigration Judges is the message is this: get them in and get them done. And there are those who believe it's more than get them in and get them done. It's get them in and get them out. And that has no place in our immigration law, in our immigration system, in our immigration court system. Immigration judges need to be independent. They need to manage their own dockets. Certainly, performance standards are valid, and judges should be held to performance standards, not quotas. But those standards should be measured by judicial standards, and they should be publicly transparent. And we have that, and we have had that. But quotas are unprecedented. It'll only cause further delays. Judges will be more concerned with getting cases done than getting them right, than giving people the opportunity to be heard. You'll see more appeals, more remands, and the thought process of having quotas to reduce backlogs will be a complete failure. And I speak from many years of experience on the bench and my experience under our immigration laws. So I thank you.
Thank you, Judge Gossert. So, Catherine, we can open it up now for questions.
At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touch-tone telephone. You may withdraw your question at any time by pressing the pound key. Once again, to ask a question, please press star and one on your touch-tone telephone. And we do have our first question from Pilar Marrero with La Opinión. And your mic.
Thank you. Hi, thank you for joining this call. I have two questions. One, when was this report initially ordered? Was it by the Obama administration? Was it under the Obama administration? And second, the judge is saying that this will result in a complete failure of reducing the backlog, but at the same time, reduction of due process will probably result in what? More deportations? What will happen, if we can accomplish it in the future?
All right, thanks, Pilar. Emily, you want to start off with the questions about where these came from?
Sure. So I think we have to assume that the report, which was a year-long report was issued in April 2017, was commissioned under the Obama administration. I don't think that takes away any of the value of the report, in that this administration had this information. And my understanding is also that they may have decided to discontinue this report or to not see it through, and they did not decide to do that. And I also just want to mention one thing, which I keep coming back to this as I think about this report, in that we requested all documents around any memoranda, documents, reports that are looking at some of these issues. And so because our FOIA request was submitted in December 2017, we would have received any contrary reports talking about other ways to address these issues by this administration, and we received none. So we have to imagine that this is what this report, unless the FOIA request has not been complied with, summarizes the thinking around what should be done on these issues, and there's nothing else that this administration is looking at that we have seen. And so, again, I think there is an enormous amount of value here that should have been taken into consideration by this administration.
Okay, Congresswoman Lofgren or Judge Gossert, you want to talk about the consequences of due process violations?
Well, if I can, certainly the judge as an experienced judicial officer can talk about the processes, but the fundamental issue is that every person is entitled to due process of law in the United States. It's one of the things that makes us different than authoritarian regimes. It makes us a special. It makes us an exceptional case. And for the administration to take these steps that do not enhance the requirements of due process is really a very disturbing trend, unfortunately not an isolated one. In terms of will this work to speed things up, chances are no, because although this is, I think, very clearly intended to create more rapid deportations, individuals do have rights to the appellate courts. There is a right to appeal to the appellate courts, who in some cases have more immigration cases than any other type of matter. Why? It's really a failure to provide an orderly and sufficiently staffed system in the immigration courts. And, you know, it's caused a lot of us to think about the structure of the immigration courts themselves. They're administrative judges and administrative law proceeding. That works until somebody tries to corrupt the process. And I think increasingly many of us are thinking about the model that was done with the bankruptcy courts in the 1970s. As a matter of fact, I worked on that as a young staffer, and whether we need that kind of judicial independence to make sure that the Constitution is adhered to. That's a longer discussion, but it's a discussion that needs to be had.
Thank you. Anybody else? We'll take another question.
Let me just indicate that clearly if quotas and deadlines are applied to our immigration courts, judicial time and energy is going to be diverted to documenting performance rather than deciding cases properly. And so a judge becomes one who's concerned about about job security and whether or not they're going to be able to meet unrealistic quotas and demands. Certainly that impedes the very essence and process of due process. Denying a continuance, excluding a witness, motivated because the judge has to meet a quota, obviously is not a full and fair hearing and is not due process. Under the judicial canon of ethics, no judge should hear a case in which he or she has a financial interest. And if you impose quotas on judges and those quotas are a measurement on the judge's security, the judge's ability to keep his or her job, the judge's ability to receive a performance rating, which will enhance one's salary, that, in my opinion, is a conflict right there. The unacceptable backlogs, which we've mentioned in our courts, are due to decades of inadequate funding, as the Congresswoman has mentioned, and politically motivated interference, quite frankly, from administration to administration, where priorities are constantly changing and judges are not able to manage their dockets and bring forward those cases that are ripe for adjudication. And we've seen a recent example of this in the last year over the surge of young children and accompanied and unaccompanied minors and their detention and diverting resources to begin these particular cases, which clearly were not ripe for adjudication, but resulted in many, many judges having to cancel thousands of dockets, cases nationwide on dockets that were ready for adjudication. So this clearly is an assault on the concept of due process in our immigration court system.
Excellent. Thank you. Next question.
As a reminder, to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touch-tone telephone. Our next question comes from Tal Copan with CNN, and your line is open.
Hi, thanks for having the call. I'm just curious, anticipating that DOJ pushes back and says, you know, the quotas don't predetermine an outcome. They simply say these are the steps we want completed in this amount of time. I mean, how do you make the case that what they have rolled out is not what is contemplated in the report, which is a process-focused performance measurement standard?
I'd like to say, in addition to the quotas, the report indicates how important the LOP program is. This was a program that has just recently been reauthorized and reappropriated. We went through this with Richard Nixon, who refused to spend money appropriated by the Congress, and we did something about that by adopting the Budget Control Act back in the 70s. The administration cannot lawfully just refuse to do what the Congress has ordered it to do, and I think that is something that will be pursued in the appropriate venue. As to these quota systems, I don't know all the immigration judges, but the judges I do know, I think, would be hard-pressed to say, you know, here is an 8-year-old before me without a lawyer, and I've got to have that child who speaks no English take that case up in 15 minutes and decide whether or not that child gets sent back to potentially be murdered. That's not due process. And so I think this is going to come to a head between the judicial branch, the legislative branch, and the executive branch. That is really, you know, unfortunate, because we should hold our administration to the high standard of the Constitution, which all of us take an oath to protect and defend. What they are doing is going to undercut due process. I would hope that they would consider how destructive and counterproductive these orders are, and further, that they're contrary to the very lengthy, scholarly, and apolitical report that was done by this accounting firm that shows how to actually get these huge caseloads managed and moving again in a more productive and lawful way.
Thank you. Yeah, I would just add, if I may, Ben, Congresswoman Loughran has really hit the nail on the head. But in terms of the question, you know, what's the pushback? How are you going to measure this? I think you'll probably see it at appellate reviews. If I deny a continuance to someone who's married to a U.S. citizen who is awaiting the adjudication of a visa petition, by way of example, by the United States Citizenship and Immigration Service, which has sole jurisdiction over the visa application, and the case is not ripe for me to hear to adjust the status of the respondent before me because the visa has yet to be approved, and I deny that continuance on the basis, well, your case has been called before me and I have to move my docket along, certainly that's an appealable issue, and certainly, in my opinion, would be an abuse of the discretion of the judge. Another example, and just one other example, if I may, if a person comes before me and says, Judge, I have 3 witnesses I want to call today, and I say, no, you don't have that much time, call your best witness, only one witness. Certainly those are challenges of due process, and certainly would ultimately challenge the validity of a quota system.
This is Emily. I just wanted to ask the judge one question, which seems to me, if a satisfactory performance rating is tied up in quotas now, and whether or not the decision by the immigration judge is reversed by the appellate body or by a court of appeals, it sounds to me, based on what you just described, that the judges are in another catch-22 situation where If their decision is found to be unlawful, if they appeal the continuance issue, if the respondent appeals the continuance issue, that could be a reversal of a decision. So
it may cause a motion to have the judge recuse him or herself. The short answer to the question is I'm very happy in retirement under these. Circumstances. And it really is, quite candidly, a sad day in our immigration court system and for our judges. They're being placed in a very, very difficult position and situation. Ashley Tabador, who's the president of the National Association of Immigration Judges, spoke very well at the subcommittee hearing last week on these very issues.
And I will say, this is Emily, just in response to the question from the reporter, in terms of whether or not the agency would say that this report supports a model that includes IJ quotas, I just don't think contextually, given the recommendations here, that even with the redactions and any staffing model that's here that maybe we aren't able to see, that when the report talks about judicial performance being measured by emphasizing process over outcomes and judicial integrity and independence being emphasized, and where judges are encouraged to write more decisions than issue oral decisions, I don't think any of that would support, a quota system.
Thanks, Emily. Any more questions,
Catherine? Go
ahead, Laura.
Sorry, this is Laura Lund. I just wanted to mention that on page 17, there's a table of all of the bottlenecks that exist in the immigration court context. And including delays in processing NCAs, delays in motions. I mean, all of these things are pieces of the puzzle that the Legal Orientation Program plugs into in terms of helping the immigration court. We will notify the court if we believe that an individual has not received a notice to appear so that they can collaborate with ICE to make sure that the case is being processed and somebody isn't just languishing in detention. Again, we provide attorney lists so that individuals can hire private counsel so that they don't have to seek a continuance in order to find an attorney. I mean, all of these pieces of the puzzle go directly into Table 8 on bottlenecks, and so it really does highlight just how important the Legal Orientation Program is in terms of expediting judicial efficiency.
Good point. Thank you. Catherine, is there other questions?
Again, to ask a question, press star and one. Our next question is from Julian Aguilar with Texas Tribune, and your line is now open.
Thank you. Good afternoon. While we were on this call, DHS Secretary Nielsen, I guess, followed up on the president's tweet this morning with respect to the caravan or the members of the caravan that are intent on seeking asylum. And according to the statement, it said that they'll be sending an influx of USCIS asylum officers, ICE attorneys, DOJ immigration judges, and DOJ prosecutors to the southern border, just for this one example. I know that some judges have been rearranged and moved around in previous months, but this seems like a targeted sort of mission to I guess, address this one influx or, reported influx. I think it's just a few dozen now. Does anybody want to comment on what may or may happen with these asylum seekers just based on the statement that came out not more than 10 minutes ago?
Mm. Can I just say, I think that the president has tried to fan fears of the other through misstating what this group is about. This every year, I mean, it's not just this year, every year, there is a demonstration in Mexico about asylees. There has not been thousands of people as a consequence coming to the U.S. border, not in prior years and not in this year either. This is a way to stir up hatred in the United States, number one. Number two, people who have a legitimate fear of persecution under American law have a right to present their case to see whether they are legally eligible for asylum. That's not a violation of immigration law. That's part of immigration law. So I think that these cases need to be handled in an orderly manner with adequate opportunity for the applicants under law to make their case, present their evidence. And any effort to short-circuit that would violate American law and, by the way, violate the norms of international law that were formed after World War II in reaction to countries turning away Jews fleeing from Nazi Germany. So let's make sure that we hold our U.S. government to the standards of adhering to law and adhering to our Constitution.
And I would just say, this is Ben Johnson, I would just say that, you know, while the inclusion of asylum officers and judges, you know, to the resources being deployed, you know, towards the arrival of these asylum seekers, you know, that might be good optics, but in order for it to be good policy, you have to ask what's their mandate. If the people that are being showed up, people who are showing up for the administration, whether asylum officers or judges or prosecutors, if their mandate is to move quickly, then you have undermined the commitment to ensuring somebody is looking at the facts of the case and deciding whether, in fact, those people are entitled to protections under our law. The other thing I would point out in this context is that this administration and previous administrations have been very quick to point out the evilness of some of these gangs and of the violence that's happening in the Northern Triangle of Central America, Honduras, Guatemala, El Salvador. And yet at the same time, they seem completely deaf, dumb, and blind to the victims of those violence. These folks are fleeing a very real, you know, dramatic spike in violence. And in many instances, it is directed specifically at women and girls, holding those women and girls as hostages and ransom in order to get entire communities to consent to the oppressiveness of these gangs. So you can't, on the one hand, say that these gangs and this violence exists and then ignore the pleas and the legal rights of those people that are fleeing that violence.
Thank you.
Catherine, next question.
Our next question comes from Diane Solis with the Dallas Morning News. And your line is now open.
Yeah, thank you for this call. Is a lawsuit being drafted now challenging performance quotas? And might it take up Judge Gossett's point that no judge should hear a case in which he or she has a financial interest?
Getting lawyers to talk about potential lawsuits is always a challenge. I don't know whether that's something that we can share. I don't know, Judge Gossett, whether you have any sense of whether that's being contemplated or not.
From the perspective of the judges, the only thing that the judges can do, the National Association of Immigration Judges is a union that represents all our judges, and we, in fact, do have a contract with the EOIR and the Chief Judge's Office. But as federal employees, you're really restricted on what you can and cannot do. And I know that there is continuing discussion on this whole quota concept and more specifically the numbers that have been announced. So from the judge's perspective, because we are employees of the Department of Justice, obviously, if the quotas are imposed upon the judges, then they're going to have to adhere to these, which in fact will create all the problems that we have been talking about and literally ruin, in my opinion, the independence of our judges and the court system.
I guess what I would say is that whether a lawsuit is possible or being contemplated in terms of attacking or challenging the policies themselves, I feel very, very confident that there will be many attorneys watching for the outcomes of those policies, so that when judges feel compelled or forced through these policies to deny continuances or to refuse the admission of witness testimony or other things that are implemented in order to make the process move faster, to the extent that those things challenge or deny due process in immigration courts, I'm sure that there will be folks that are challenging those outcomes.
Yes.
Catherine, other questions?
We have no further questions at this time, so I will turn the call back to you for additional remarks.
Okay, Congresswoman, I don't know if you had any final thoughts you wanted to share. I know on this or anybody else?
No, I'll just close before I run off to say thank you to the judge, to Ayla, and to all the participants, but also to the press, because, you know, it's easy to forget what's going on in immigration court. These are people who, in many cases, are desperate. They're not yet Americans. And yet, the preservation of our Constitution and its requirements matters to all of us. So I thank you for the appreciation of that and for covering this. When our Constitution starts to crumble, it crumbles for everyone.
Emily, 10 seconds or so to close.
I just wanted to thank everyone for joining, and I'm more than happy to talk through any of the sort of technical issues that you came across in the report after the call.
Laura, any final closing thoughts?
I just want to thank you all for listening to how this impacts the individuals who are being detained in our country, who are being shut away, separated from their families, who are asylum seekers, who are fleeing persecution. They don't have voices because they have been stripped of their access to our communities. And so I commend you for raising up these issues to make sure that they are being heard.
Judge Gossert?
Yes, the fix, if you would, is exactly what Congresswoman Lofgren has said. To have a truly independent court, we need to create an Article I court for our United States immigration judges in the immigration court system.
Thank you all very much for your time. If you have questions, George Tamaris or Wendy Felice are available, and I know their information is on the press release. Thank you very much.